This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts, and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please welcome with me Grace Shua from Singapore. Grace spent her early childhood in Singapore and moved to New Zealand with her parents when she was 9 years old. She then went back and forth from New Zealand to Singapore and vice versa. Grace spent an equal amount of time in both countries and is able to call both her home. Hi, Grace. Thank you so much for making time to record this episode with me today.
No worries.
It's really good to have you here because I have not had the chance to interview someone from Singapore so far.
Oh, well, I'm really excited to kind of have this interview as I've never had one on podcast before.
That's great. It's a new experience for you as well. I have been able to talk to you before the recording already, so I know a little bit more. But I'm really, really curious to know a little bit more about your early childhood and how you grew up in Singapore. If you could just tell us a little bit of how that looked like, how your lifestyle looked like when you were in Singapore, how your childhood looked like. Yeah, that would be awesome to have like a little start into your life.
Sure. So growing up in Singapore was really cool, actually. I was living next to a jungle.
Wow.
Where like the old colonial settlements used to be. And back when the British was in Singapore at that time, many, many years ago, obviously. And so where I lived was in a very historical area. And part of it was still full of, like, you know, trees and nature and jungle. And I had a lot of pets that were running around. And it was really nice. Like, but obviously now things have developed and things have changed quite a bit. Yeah. And it's become more city-like. But growing up was really nice. And the temperature was, I mean, it's a bit humid and hot compared to New Zealand.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of like just live with it. And, you know, we have air conditioning in the house all the time. So for all Kiwi people who are like, well, summer's getting very hot and they've never had to use air conditioning before, like I'm so well acquainted with air conditioning. So every time it's hot, I'm like, turn on the aircon, you know? So that was quite a nice childhood. And then I went to school in Singapore, obviously, and things were a bit different. And in comparison, we studied a lot and we did a lot of extracurricular activities because my parents were like, well, we don't know what you're going to be good at, so why don't we expose you to as much things as possible?
Which is pretty cool, to be honest.
Yeah, like, so we did a lot of things, like, as a kid. Like, you know, it was very fun. Like, I did horse riding in Malaysia. I traveled a lot with my parents. They traveled quite a bit around Asia as well as, you know, like, Europe and, of course, New Zealand, Australia. That's how we ended up moving here when I was 9. And things were quite interesting. The only thing was the academic curriculum. It was very intense. So we were expected to study quite a bit and spend a lot of time focusing mainly on math and, you know, Mandarin, our second language. And so when I made that move to New Zealand, things were very different. And there were certain topics I would fall behind on in New Zealand, but there will be topics like math that I was like very advanced in. So that was interesting to know like the different focuses in two different countries.
Yeah. So it sounds pretty much like with your parents giving you the option or the possibility to try a lot of things, A, it sounds quite exhausting and like full on.
Yes.
But on the other hand, it seems like that you really found out what you were good at, what you really like finding your niche and what you prefer doing and what you don't like. So in that case, it was probably a really good thing so that you could just advance to the things you could tell you were good at or you're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you that I'm in a dream job, dream career, whatever, right? But I mean, I see it as, you know, whatever makes you like be able to afford the things that you enjoy doing. Like I have a lot of really wide hobbies that I've taken up since I was young until now, and they change all the time. So but I mean, that's the downside of giving your kid too many options, right? Because you chop and change all the time. And my recent ones were basically I learned Spanish during COVID. I actually had a tutor who taught me Spanish, and now I can read quite a lot, actually, although I don't practice it super often. The other thing is I really enjoy traveling, so I keep abreast with, like, you know, all these different changes and things I've observed, like, overseas quite a bit. For example, completely cashless payments that I saw in China, even to people who were on the streets and, you know, you would normally give a homeless person money, but they had their own personal individual QR code that you would pay to their account. And it's highly, highly advanced, and everything is paid via, you know, Alipay, for example, like completely cashless. And I see that sort of coming, becoming more widespread in different countries when it comes to security with money, security with, you know, like in terms of fraud, right? So all these sort of transactions, they require your ID, your passport verification to use this. And essentially, it sounds more like it's pushing all these technologies outside of the bank. So the banks don't have control over these things anymore. So that's an interesting sort of like trend that we're seeing, right? So yeah, like I really enjoy going overseas and learning what's happening around the world and, you know, how can I take my experience to how I think about what I'm doing in New Zealand, which is quite good as well, because, you know, you think about, like, because I work in the product team, and that's how we come up with products for people. And because I work for a bank, it's like financial products. You kind of like figure out, well, you know, like, are there new ideas that you can sort of come up with that you see overseas as well? And how can you convince people, like your stakeholders or your bosses, to focus on certain areas for customers? And that's very interesting, I find.
Yeah, it's a really cool opportunity to, especially when you travel around and see so many advanced things, to bring a little bit back to the country you are living in and try to advance this and have new ideas and say, okay, I have seen it working somewhere else, so we could be able to do it too. And of course, there are different regulations, but very interesting. Are there any hobbies you have kept from when you were in Singapore and you were younger until now that you say, okay, this is really something I enjoyed then and I still enjoy now?
I mean, I think the only hobby that I've kept was basically you know, traveling. That's what I've like kept going. I do have a standard certain amount of time that I take off, even if it's unpaid sometimes, or even if it's to work remotely, that I kind of like keep up for my mental health. And, you know, because I'm a very curious person by nature. So
yeah.
There are certain things that I like to do in life that I've told myself that this is the criteria for how I want to live my life. And if I don't get those days, then mentally I'm not going to be able to do well in my job or be fresh enough to sort of like live life to the fullest, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but there is one thing that I've kept, which is basically I used to have pet rabbits when I was a kid back in Singapore, and now I have a pet rabbit that I've trained so well that it's like a dog. Like, he poops in the exact same area that he normally does, inside and outside the house, and he roams. I let him run in and out of the house freely. And he kind of knows, like, when it's time to come back, and, you know, like, even when he goes back to his cage and everything, like, it's amazing. Like, he doesn't, you know, animals are so intelligent, and, like, even a very, very tiny, I mean, he's not that tiny, but, you know, like a rabbit, most people would imagine they don't do much and, you know, they can't be trained or they're not very smart or they don't know much about them.
Yeah,
but because I had them as kids, like I know them really well. Yeah. So so I do know them well, and I train them, and it's been really cool, like keeping that, because it brings me back to my childhood where I had, you know,
and it brings you joy, and it sounds really cute.
Yes, he's really really cute. Yes,
right.
So,
Do you have or can you tell us a little bit more about the culture in Singapore? Because there are distinctive differences between the culture here in New Zealand and the culture in Singapore. And I think that gives us a little bit of an understanding of who you are as well.
Yeah, so like growing up in Singapore, we were told that we have to live with different people of different backgrounds, races, cultures, religion, and we have like four distinct cultures, which is basically you've got Malay people, which are the original inhabitants of the land, and then you've got a majority Chinese population that mainly came from South China. That's where all our ancestors came from. Then we've got Indian, a small minority of Southern Indian people. And then we've got, like I mentioned earlier, we were colonized by the British for a couple of years. And so we've got also a mixture of, you know, like Eurasian community, white community. And also because it's like a financial hub and super, like it's in a really, really good geographical position for trading between Europe, Asia, and all sorts. We have a lot of foreigners in Singapore, and it's very normal to see people from different countries, you know, all the time. So having grown up in that sort of environment, like I've grown up with like people of different ethnicity, cultures, religion. And for me, when I moved to New Zealand, I thought that was kind of similar in New Zealand. So for me, like I have friends from so many different backgrounds that it's amazing how we can share each other's culture very easily. But if you were to ask me about certain types of culture in Singapore, like there are certain types of culture which can be distinct to, like, for example, I am of Chinese descent, but my dad is of Peranakan descent. So that's like half Chinese, half Malay sort of customs.
Interesting.
And so, you know, even our food is very mixed, you know, like sweet, sour, spicy, you know. We are so used to having like certain curries that have like coconut in them. And most people, when they hear curry, they're like, oh, Indian curry. Like, no, there is Chinese curry in Singapore. And there's also different versions of different dishes in Singapore, you know, like chicken rice, which is one of my favorite dishes, like Hainan chicken rice. It originated from people from Hainan that brought it over to Singapore, and it became super popular. But even the Malays have their own version of chicken rice. So it's like, and it tastes different as well. So it's just amazing how it's like a melting pot of culture. And like, it's like, it made me a very adaptable person. I could talk to anyone from different cultures, different countries, and just feel at ease, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Do you think because of all of that and all of these different cultures all coming together in one country, have you, or would you say that they are less judgmental and less discriminating against other people, other cultures?
I think, you know, like, discrimination always happens at, like, you know, with every culture to some extent, and then somehow it also turns into jokes, and you know, you actually have friends of like different culture, race, religion, but I think fundamentally everyone just understands that, you know, like any sort of relationship that you have with your friends, that you put certain things you disagree on the side, and you still have that sort of like good coexisting relationship.
So
I think that's quite important, right? Like, of course there's certain things you don't like, but you need to coexist peacefully, and you don't want to have any sort of like riots happening or fighting going on. So and that's quite important, I think, because now that we're so globalized, you're gonna have people that you've met that you've never encountered or been to their country, so you don't want to have a lot of like issues or tension with people, you know.
Which is very good, like very advanced thinking as well, because clearly that's what we usually all want, that we can peacefully coexist and accept differences as well. We don't have to agree, like we don't have to like everything, but just to be able to find a way to live together peacefully is a really good goal, that's for sure. Some things or some rules are quite extreme in Singapore, I would call it.
They are,
Can you tell us a little bit about how it happened that, for example, there is this rule that you're not allowed to eat chewing gum in Singapore? And a lot of people who didn't know that before would think it's a joke. So can you tell us a little bit about those quite strict rules in those kind of aspects?
So I think it happened back in the 90s or something, or 80s, when the mass rapid transport system was first developed in Singapore. And when they rolled it out, I think at that time, chewing gum was not banned, and people were chewing it and sticking it all over the place in public spaces, even on the streets. And I think the thinking was, well, we spend so much money cleaning the city, and to clean chewing gum is costing us a lot of money, and it's very uncomfortable for the public. If you sit on a space, you don't want something sticking on your pants or your shoe, right? So I think the mentality was, if we got rid of that, you know, if we had a fine for anyone who chews gum and throws it, or anyone who litters, or anyone who inconveniences people in general in public space, then we'll impose a fine, and that would prevent a lot of, like, you know, costs and like inconvenience for the public, because public spaces are meant to be used respectfully, and not everyone respects it, right? So that's why they probably did that, and it just stops a lot of issues like cleanup, cost, inconvenience. So
do you think it is doable because Singapore is such a small country? Because I'm pretty sure that every country would benefit from not having chewing gum all over the city. not yes. on the streets or under the table or wherever.
Yes. I mean, I can't compare with like New Zealand, for example, because the population is very small and there's a lot of space and there's not much, like people don't make full use of the public transport systems. We mainly use cars, so you don't really see that much of it here. I mean, if you compare to other countries that are highly populated, like Germany and, you know, Europe, like you will notice that, you know, there is a lot of waste that is being thrown around as well. And of course, I think people will benefit from it. But then there's that issue of like individual freedom. Like, why can't we do things but be trusted by the government that we're going to behave ourselves and not throw things around, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think Singapore just took the liberty to say, look, we've got so many cultures and different religions and, you know, people who live differently, right? So if we just ban it for all, it's all fair, right?
We don't really take away your freedom. We just tell you you're not allowed to eat anything ever.
I think they just don't trust people that much, I would say. So there's right. a different approach, right? Like you take out the stick. It's like how a lot of employers now are giving employees the stick, saying that you have to come into the office 50% of the time, and it's tied to your annual pay rise or your bonus. So if you don't make it, right. then, you know, that's wow. it. And people fight against this, right? They fight against this all the time. But, I mean, if you don't put things into law or enforce it, then people just can't be trusted. I mean, human nature, right?
Oh my God. That's, I'm pretty sure there would be a lot of people who would love to have a debate over that, but we're not yeah. here for that today. But it's super interesting.
It is so interesting, yes.
Thank you so much for giving us a little bit more insight of like in those kind of topics as well. How did it happen? You have been growing up there and you were traveling around a lot with your parents. How did it happen, or how did the idea of actually moving away from Singapore and moving to New Zealand come about? I mean, it came from your parents, obviously, since you yeah. were 9 years yeah. old, but how did that kind of decision-making process started? Do you know?
Yeah, I think it's like with everyone else, right? Like, why do we move to a country? Because we think the grass is greener on the other side, right? I mean, there are certain things that everyone values in their life differently, right? Some people yeah. might value, I mean, as a joke, or maybe really. some people value making lots of money and, you know, buying things that they want, traveling around the region a lot. Some people like warmer climate, so people move to Singapore as they like the warmer climate, the lower taxes, higher salaries, more job opportunities. Whereas, you know, people who move to New Zealand, they're saying, oh, I want a slower pace of life. I want better work-life balance. I don't care so much about material possessions. I like a quiet, secluded life, or I want to just, you know, live on a farm or like live in a nice like area where like, you know, you can have a lot of nature, because Singapore is like very city-like, right? So yeah. I think my parents felt like, you know, New Zealand was like their dream sort of country, like had perfect temperature, you know, nice four seasons. You could buy a nice plot of land, live in a nice house for cheaper, because Singapore is like a very expensive sort of country to live in. And you always have to stress out at work, you know, to pay for everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, New Zealand back then was like a dream, because you could, you know, just have a lot more for, you know, and have a quieter life.
Yeah.
And it was a good family place to raise your family. And that's why they decided New Zealand's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that you have been moving back and forth all the time. Yeah. And yes. you enjoyed quite a lifestyle of, you know, just splitting yourself into like one part of your heart is in New Zealand, one part of your heart is in Singapore, because you call both your home and you spend equally time in both countries. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, going back and forth, what you did, why did you make the decision to not just stay in one country, a little bit about that whole lifestyle of yours?
Yeah, so like I'm very active and I love, like, you know, my mom calls it running around. So I like the hecticness of, like, you know, packing your bags, going on an adventure, going to another country. You like two houses kind of sort of lifestyle. And you're like, why not love both and spend equal amount of time in both, right? So I always use Singapore as a pit stop for all my travels. And I have so many friends that still live in Singapore that I knew since childhood that I still hang out with and connect with. And like you, sort of like, you know, not in a very formal podcast way, but, you know, ask them about their lifestyle, what do they do, you know, exchange stories, experiences, and I really value that. So, so I do enjoy going home, seeing my family, because I've got family that live there still.
Yeah.
Friends, and also because, you know, like culturally, like, you know, I do align with them because...
Yeah.
You come from that culture and you can't find that many people of that same culture, for example, in New Zealand. So there would be certain things that you know, Asian people would do that, you know, you feel comfortable in that space or circle doing, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why it's important to sort of like keep in touch with your roots, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because that is also a sense of familiarity and bonding. And that's kind of what culture is, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what I do. I spend a lot of time in Singapore. I spend a lot of time in New Zealand where I reside and, you know, work most of the time. And I've got friends that I've known since university days here as well. And even new people that I met through jobs that I've had in New Zealand. And it just gives me the opportunity to live two different lifestyles in one life, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which is quite amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know so much about, you know, like being there and also about New Zealand. So I take both countries with me in my heart where I feel like I fit. Because, you know, sometimes when you go to another country, you're like, I have an identity crisis because I live part of my life and formative years in Singapore and New Zealand. Which one do I choose? So when I moved here, you know, like things were different and super different for me. So I had to adapt to that as well. Even with the curriculum, even with like what people valued in life, like sports, for example. Whereas in Asia, it's like study, study, study.
Yeah.
So it makes you an all-rounded sort of person. Not that I'm good at sports, but like, you know, maybe, you know, being a bit more outspoken, being a bit more, conversational compared to overseas, because over here people are like, hey, how are you doing? And, you know, you have that nice small talk interaction, which is nice to have, even if you don't really like want to know that person. It's like a good sort of like chat that you can have. Which actually, funnily enough, there was a podcast on what kind of interactions actually make you feel good in life, and it's not necessarily, you know, your partner or your friends, but it's daily interactions with random people that make up part of, you know, your life and helps reduce anxiety and depression. So we should be doing more of that.
Absolutely, it's great. And I love that you mentioned those things as well, because it's sometimes just I've heard it in a study as well, that even just the 5 minute in a cafe talking to a stranger can change everything. It's really cool. do you still have a house in Singapore, like your parents? Do you still have like a place you can always go to there? Yeah. And here in New Zealand as well, or here you have your apartment, I assume.
Yes. So, yes, we do have like a place back in Singapore as well as in New Zealand. So we literally have two homes, kind of like, you know, most people who've kind of left, you know, their countries to reside somewhere else or settle somewhere else. So, yeah, so equally we do feel like, you know, I can go home and I can also go home here. So
it's very good. Yeah, it's very good. Like quite I have to say, not everyone can afford that. Like, I would love to have that if I could have a place which is my own back in Germany.
Yeah.
And a place here, that would be amazing. But of course, I have my family in Germany, so I can visit as long as they are there. But it's probably just to feel that security of you have a place where you can always go no matter what. Are your parents living in New Zealand and Singapore, or also like you go back and forth?
Yes, so it's pretty back and forth because, you know, my dad's retired, my mom is semi-retired, so there's a lot of flexibility in terms of, you know, where they live here and there. But, you know, looking at them and now being, you know, like in your 30s, you sort of like look at older people and you're like, well, when can I retire? How do I feel comfortable? Do I have enough savings? Those kind of topics, which is also the product that I deal with. So if you want financial sort of help, not advice, because I'm not a financial advisor. Like, let me know and, you know, we can talk about that because, you know, I love helping people who are not totally financially savvy sort of think about their retirement and what it looks for them and what it means to them. Yeah, and it's very interesting because we do interview people for that as well to find out a bit more of our customer base.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. I might take you up on that offer.
Yes. And in a way, it's giving back to, you know, like, you know, people your age and the community because, you know, like the product that I dealt with was KiwiSaver. And so a lot of people are wondering, what can I do with my KiwiSaver? What does it mean for me? And do I have enough saved for retirement? So that's a very good sort of conversational topic as well. So that's basically what I work with. And so observing them, you kind of like, you know, wonder, how can I make this work, right? And all the hobbies that you enjoy, how can I afford them? You know, do I have to make a ridiculous amount of money? Or do I just monitor my spending and, you know, how I save in a wise way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say that, because it seems like it, the way of living of your parents, that's the impact it has on you, that you are so fluid, that you can see yourself living wherever, that you are like adaptable, that you're considering what you want to do when you are older, where you want to live. Like, what would you otherwise say you took away from your parents' lifestyle?
I would say that the first thing that they love is traveling, and I have taken that up. So I love traveling, and I would like to go back and forth. Like, my sister doesn't do it, but I do. So, you know, I think it comes with different personalities and interests and, you know, the energy level. People are like, you have so much energy for someone in your 30s. Like I feel dead and exhausted and I'm working crazy. And like, you know, and I'm like, no, I work very hard as well. I just do things like in a more intense sort of way. And I accept it as part of my lifestyle, you know. And if it's too much for me, then I have to take a step back. But I realized that, you know, sometimes when you're working too hard or you're too exhausted at work, I would say put yourself at number one and your mental health at number one, because at the end of the day, you're just a number in the company's books. No one's going to care about you, whether you die or whatever. So, or get hit by a bus the next day. No one cares. So, you know, you should.
I hope they do care, but yeah, you are easily replaceable.
You're easily replaceable. Oh no, Grace died. Okay, let's look into hiring someone else.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, that's how it is.
So, you know, things are becoming less personal, right? If we're becoming less human in some ways because of technology, even though we need technology and it has improved our lives drastically to some extent. But I think we need to also scale back down to ourselves and be like, you know, what are we living for? What is our purpose in life? What do we enjoy? And, you know, what would make me feel, you know, complete as a human, you know? And I think that's very important. Like, whether you're single, you're in a relationship, whether you have children. I mean, with children, it's a bit hard because people get very exhausted and stuff. But yeah, like, I think that's very important. And that's how you live. That's how you get energy, I think, because when you're positive and you really know how to, you know, segregate that and come back to your kind of purpose and what you enjoy about life and why you live and all these things, then, you know, you don't feel exhausted. Like, you feel like you have so much energy to do so many different things. And that's what I feel. I feel like there's so many countries I want to travel. There's so many things I want to do. There's so many connections that I still have with friends that I haven't seen in a long time. And I do reconnect with some people even after 10 years when I go traveling.
Me too.
And that's an amazing feeling, right? So
yeah, I love
So people are like, what the hell are you doing? Don't even know where you are at the moment.
So can you give us all your secrets? How do you make it work that you can travel so much with your work? Like, can you just walk us a little bit through how you manage your work life and then travel as much as you can?
Yeah, so I actually keep quite a healthy diet. So I do have, because I do have like gut issues and, you know, and I realized that it has to do with your mental health, your anxiety levels, and how you feel about things in general. Sometimes it involuntarily feels like you don't feel stressed or anything, but you don't feel well, right, in your gut. But so with healthy eating, I used to exercise a lot. I wish I exercise more now. But even though I don't exercise as much, I still have good energy levels. I think it's just basically, you know, asking for, you know, managing the relations you have at work as well. Knowing where you stand when it comes with certain things. Like last year, my boss wasn't very happy with me taking a month off. And I said, well, I need that time off. So if you give me that time off, you know, I proved to her before I went off that I could handle all the things that were thrown at me, and she was very impressed because at the time I started a new role, I was only there for 3 months, and there was hardly any senior leaders left in the company because there was school holidays. So I proved myself. So sometimes, like at work, you need to have buy-in from your managers that, you know, you'll do a good job, you're enthusiastic, you deliver what you say you're going to deliver, and, you know, you manage your workload well, because every day, you know, sometimes it's very intense at work. Sometimes you need time to even to take a break or to say no, or what is your philosophy? Like, do you want to work past a certain time? Do you want to wake up earlier to do your job? Or like, what works for you, right? So I managed to actually, funnily enough, I do make sure that I have enough time for a break and to have lunch and have time to myself despite a very busy day. Because I think it's very important, like all those 10 million items that are sitting there can wait for when you are having a better, like in a better mind space to do it. So, and sometimes when you're traveling, it gets stressful because you're like, oh shit, time difference. I have to get up earlier to do this. I have to do this within a certain amount of time. And, you know, you kind of pace yourself. Because sometimes, how many times a day, sometimes you're like, I actually have so much free time. Like, do I have to work the full 7.5 hours, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you pace yourself and you understand your workflow and you do proper planning, that sort of thing. And I think that kind of works. Like, I always do timelines for all my projects that I have on hand, even things that I feel like doesn't need to be shared with the rest of the business. But I always keep a tab on like all the things that I need to do for the whole year and where I'm at. And I think it's also being super organized and knowing where everything is.
Yeah.
So that's how I normally manage it. So that I have time for things that I enjoy doing and, you know, work-wise, certain things as well.
Yeah. And also for everyone who's listening and watching, you are also sometimes working while you are traveling, right? You're not just taking a month off, not seeing work, being like, bye, see you later, guys. Yeah. See you in a month. You are actually also scheduled time to work to make it work.
Yes. So I have to get, you have to get very used to adjusting to the time differences and like working on demand and understanding, you know, like I plan a lot of things before they happen. So when I'm away and I'm on holiday and all that kind of stuff, like I'm flexible to change certain things up or to do certain tasks that I tell myself to do it and really focus for that good 5 hours, for example, or, you know, and when you set your mind to it and you, when it's amazing how the body actually like, you know, produces results because, you know, you have only a certain amount of time to get it done. And then after that, you want to do visit all the sites that you said that you're going to visit. And I don't get much leave all the time. Usually I would get about, I mean, I can work remotely for a while, but then sometimes you actually need time off.
Yeah.
And everyone only gets about 20 something days off. So how do you maximize that as well?
Yeah.
So sometimes I would like to have unpaid leave, but sometimes you have to think about, like, can I afford that unpaid leave? So there's a lot of, like, things to consider, not just because not everyone can afford that unpaid leave, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yes. So that's normally what I do.
Very cool. But I think it's a lot of dedication, a lot of organization, as you said before, and also just resilience in some other aspects. And high energy, as you said.
Yes, it's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. So when people say mental health, it is very important. It's all in the mind.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that because we underestimate how tired we are when we are doing so much of the stuff we don't enjoy and so little of the things we actually need to feel alive and to make us happy and just really enjoy it. So the power of filling up our cup with good things is, massive.
Yeah, definitely. So,
You also mentioned way earlier the topic identity, and I wanted to just grab that topic again because I find it super interesting, the idea of having two homes being kind of split equally. And you say for other people it can be an identity crisis. For you, it wasn't. How did you do that? Because I'm pretty sure lots of people coming to New Zealand, they would struggle to fit in or would have like a little identity crisis in terms of where do I belong? Am I Singaporean? Am I New Zealander? What am I? Who am I? Where do I belong? So how was that whole question for you?
I think when it comes to identity, I was struggling when I was younger, for sure, because when I moved at 9, I was trying to fit in to be like part of Kiwi culture, try to get invited to parties. Oh, I'm cool. I drink when I'm young, you know?
Yeah.
But then now as you grow up, you're like, no, like I should have said, no, this is not what I'm doing, right? But of course, there are other things from a cultural aspect that you say you want to adopt and try your hardest to fit in, because moving to another country is also about adapting to some extent, you know. If you're not happy about adaptation, then you can go back home where you came from, right? And so you can't just say, I'm sticking to this and that's it. I do not compromise. So there needs to be a compromise when you move to a different country as well to learn about another country's culture, and to, you know, be comfortable. But I would say, like, it's only later on in life that you feel fully comfortable, because during your teenage years, you're trying to figure out, you know, like, what's happening with you, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
emotionally, it could be, you know, am I straight? Am I gay? Am I bisexual? It could be, do I identify as a woman or man or, you know, the pronouns? So, I mean, yeah. It wasn't that complicated back then, but maybe now for some people, they have to consider, right? Mm-hmm. So when I, later on in life, I was like, you know what? I'm proud to be Singaporean Chinese. You know, I take, there are certain parts of my culture that I still, that are still part of me. And then there's the Kiwi culture, which is laid back. And, you know, I'm more relaxed. I don't like to be a stressor, right? So there are good aspects of both that you identify with. And later on in life, you know, when you, I don't know, nowadays organizations are so fluid and so full of like people from different cultures and stuff that, you know, everyone has to adapt to that change, right? And everyone can identify as, you know, all the culture, where they came from, and learn from each other. And they also said that organizations that have a mixture of people from different backgrounds, the teams perform better because there are so many different ways to do certain things. And some might be better, so you learn, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of similar with me. Like, I identify coming from two different cultures, and I take the benefits from both, and I'm happy to be like, well, I'm both. I'm not just one, you know?
Yeah, so rather than seeing yourself as 50-50, you see yourself as 200% pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Nice.
I like a good barbecue in summer.
So true. Yeah, I just can't get used to the fact that they have a barbecue for Christmas. Like, for me, Christmas means it's winter, yes. It's cold. And yes. So therefore, that's yes. just something
yes.
weird, yeah.
You can turn on the air conditioning and have a barbecue. and the Christmas tree.
Yeah, just mix it all up.
Yes, it's awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's so nice to have an example of someone who yeah. feels so comfortable with their identity, knows exactly, like, you know who you are, and you're proud of your ancestry, and you take the good things of both, which is amazing. Do you think there is any kind of disadvantage or negative part coming with that type of lifestyle?
Yeah, I guess so. Because, you know, you're, you know, sometimes, like, when I worked in Singapore, there was a different culture in the office. And when I came to New Zealand, people encourage you to ask more questions. But in Singapore, if you ask more questions, people are thinking, did you not read up to know the answers before you actually ask those questions? But sometimes it's quite dumb because you won't know unless you have experience. And in New Zealand, the culture is the more you ask, they think that you're actually more engaged and you're actually present. So it's like all these different cultures that interpret things differently.
Yeah, yeah. And so you like sometimes you come across as, If you take the stuff from the Singaporean way,
yeah,
you come across as not quite engaged in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But if you use yeah. the New Zealand way, you come across as a little bit, not dumb, but as...
You didn't do your research.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So wow. That is very interesting, right? And also, like, in Singapore, we're very used to technology. So Microsoft Teams is, like, whoa, my number one, like, tool I would use because
yeah, yeah.
it saves me the effort of walking down and talking to someone face-to-face. Whereas in New Zealand, they prefer, because in Singapore, it would be like, oh, that's more efficient, you know, I get my work done. Yeah. Don't need to have small talk. But in New Zealand, it's like, small talk matters and connecting with people face-to-face matters more
yeah.
In the workplace because you need to be seen, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's something that's interesting. And I also would say, like, certain type of vocabulary that we use in Singapore were more straightforward, whereas here there's a bit of a dance around the words, and you want
sugar coating.
Yes, sugar coating. And sometimes I'm like, I want people to tell me, if this is not a good job, don't wait till the end of the year to fix it. Like, tell me immediately if you're not happy with it, right?
Yeah.
So there's always this, like, differences in culture that you sort of like but don't like, and it's because it's so different.
Yeah, that's so true. Last question before I come to the last quick three questions is, with all these traveling back and forth, loving to travel in general, do you think you will be able to settle down one day in one place, or do you think you will always struggle to, you know, sit still in a way, and you need to run around, you need to go somewhere?
I think right now I enjoy my two homes in Singapore and New Zealand, but there is a desire to work overseas again, to maybe in Australia, because I haven't been living in Australia as a child or in my adulthood, so there's always the appeal to be like, maybe one more place or two more places. So I'm thinking about Australia maybe next year, to see how it goes. Then maybe I'll have three homes.
Yeah, that would be cool. Do you think you will end up in one place, or you will still have that? We have a nice German saying in it. We say having bumblebees in your butt, just to keep you going, and you're just not really able to stay at one place. Do you think maybe one day Australia will be like, I think I'm pretty much ready for a new adventure, and then ready for a new adventure?
Like, I think that could be. I mean, you could have a base, but then you could be like, I like to travel and, you know, spend time in certain locations and stuff. But I feel like I always have bumblebees itchy up my butt. I love exploring. I'm very curious. So I would like to go to different places and explore a bit more, as long as I'm able-bodied. And I think, you know, the moment you slow down, that's when you know your health is kind of going downwards, and before that I would like to be active, because being active is what keeps your youth, your energy, and
I actually find your life so exciting, and as I told you before as well, I could listen to you all the time, and it just makes me want to go as well. It makes me
I was told that I could be a good salesperson.
Absolutely, yeah. And in my case, you are selling the right product, and which is traveling. So I would totally be your favorite client, I guess, your customer.
Well, if you want travel tips to certain countries, or like even when you travel, like what cards to use and everything, you can let me know. And if you want to plan for your retirement,
I will hit you up.
Hit me up, and you know, happy to have that conversation.
Thank you so much. I love that. And yeah, as I said, I'm just super excited about your life, and I need to take a piece of it as well, just to make my life a little bit more lively, I guess. So we end the episode with three questions. I had to twitch yours a little bit, just because you have like a different circumstance, which is great. So usually it's pretty similar for every guest. Question number one, which you may or like you have already answered it, and I need to mention the quick three means it's usually one word, one sentence, like relatively rapid answers, just to focus on one thing. So where would you see yourself living or settling down, in what country?
I would say maybe Australia.
Let's see, I will totally check in with you again and see if you actually
stay be somewhere else.
Australia, cool. Question number two. What do you miss the most from New Zealand when you're in Singapore? And what do you miss the most from Singapore when you're in New Zealand?
So what I miss the most in New Zealand is from New Zealand would be the weather, because I think Singapore's way too hot. So New Zealand weather, I love cold weather. I love wearing layers. So yes, I would like that. What I miss from Singapore is basically, you know, the food. The food is amazing there. I love the availability. I mean, New Zealand has really good Asian cuisine, but obviously not. It doesn't do the same, you know, as back home.
Yeah.
So that's...
Great answers. Okay, last question. What would be your favorite activity in New Zealand and your favorite activity in Singapore?
I think my favorite activity in New Zealand is basically, like, I mean, I've done some hikes, but I really like the views. I love the road trips. So I would say road trips, because lots of space, lots of nice scenery to see. And the other one about Singapore would be that it's so close to everywhere. You can walk, you can take the train, you can go overseas, you know, like just very centrally located.
Yeah.
And everything's just very easy to sort of access.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Grace. This is your episode. I'm so grateful that you had the time and that you actually shared all of that with us. And, yeah, I hope maybe one day we might have a part two when you are living in Australia, just to see and check in with you. You never know if you would be keen.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Awesome. So thank you so much. And I hope that everyone who's listening enjoyed it as much as I did. And whatever they do, that they, could take something from it, even if it's just a lifestyle advice, or if it's like that they get there but moving. So I hope everyone liked it, and I hope I hear you next time. Bye bye.
Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.